up the champagne, pop. It's my house, come on, turn it up. Hear a knock on the door and the night begins. Cause we've done this before, so you come on in. Make yourself at my home, tell me where you've been. Pour yourself something cold, baby, cheers to this.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR. Now here are your hosts, Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm.
What was that, Matt Wilhelm?
Hi there.
Hello there to you, Matt Wilhelm.
Forget it. I love Wilhelms.
I liked Thank it. You. It was so good. So simple. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, Jason Gibbs, and we would be remiss if we didn't start our show off with a young man who will be with us for the next 3 weeks doing his senior project.
I apologize in advance.
As he graduates from Hawken. His name is Alex Friedman, but on this show, he will be known simply as Meatball. Meatball, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Meatball, what was it?
Talk into the mic, son.
Yeah,
talk
get closer loud. To the mic. Don't be afraid to talk loud. People All are right. the world wants to hear from you. What was it about the opportunity to work with Matt Wilhelm, Jason Gibbs, and myself that drew you to a chance to be here at CBD?
Well, I've been a lifelong Browns fan. Love football. Played since I was 8, I think, is when I started.
Led Hawken in touchdowns as a touchdown Tommy Vardell type fullback.
Strong.
A little bit. and then,
does he even know who Tommy Vardell is?
For a while. So
do you know who Tommy Vardell is?
I do not. Too young for that.
Wasn't he on the Browns?
Yes.
He was.
Come on, lifelong Browns fan.
Hey, he was probably before he was born.
I don't know. That.
He's 18 years old.
Yeah, definitely before he was born.
Okay. All right. Off the hook.
Yeah.
Mike Allstott. You know Mike Allstott?
I know who he is.
All right. Mike Allstott. All right. Yeah. And now you're here.
Now I'm here.
How's it going so far?
Good. No complaints.
No complaints.
Kind of, hanging out.
Yes. And I understand that on Friday you will have a major announcement as it pertains to your future.
I will, yeah.
Matt Wilhelm, I am told that right now, Meatball, we're going to have to put two hats out. You can bring one of them, and the kid can bring the other.
Okay.
As Meatball makes his college decision.
Great.
It's down to two schools.
Awesome.
I hope Bowling Green's one of them, or this will be his last day on the
earth. It is not. The two schools are the University of Michigan Wolverines and the Ohio State Buckeyes.
Same decision I had.
Okay, never mind. That's a lot bigger than Bowling Green. Carry on.
The head coach, Hugh Jackson, walks by the Hugh World Order here today at CBD. So we're going to have that announcement with a Buckeye and a Wolverine present. So somebody will have to play defense and somebody will play offense once the announcement is made. And I hope for your sake you don't choose to make Matt Wilhelm on offense and the kid defend you. Because that's not going to work very well. It's not going to work very well at all. Speaking of, though, we do have a massive show for you here today on CBD. Danny Shelton will be with us today. Nate Orchard will be with us today. We'll also talk with Connor Orr, who covers the NFL for NFL.com, talking about Cam Irving as one of the five rookies we shouldn't forget about this week or this year. 2015 rookie that we shouldn't forget about in 2016.
He think that big of an impact, huh?
This guy's coming in. He's going to start at the center position for the Cleveland Browns. I mean, he's got to earn it. We know that. You got to earn it. It's competition here. But he's the guy. The list, Trey Waynes, Minnesota Vikings, round one, pick 11.
Michigan State kid.
Struggle, yeah. I remember you talked to him and Mark D'Antonio. Right as he was drafted. Dante Fowler, who didn't play a snap for the Jags last year.
I think he's going to be really good down there.
I do, too. That defense is going to be fun to watch.
It is.
They're going to be fun to watch.
People are going to be athletic as hell.
People are going to be in that pool in the corners of that stadium having a great time. The Clevelander, the dancing girls.
Yes.
That's going to be – I wish we were going to Jacksonville this year. That's going to be fun. Philip Dorsett, the wide receiver from the Colts, pick 29
U, right?
From the U. Yes. Kind of a head scratcher at the time, given that they had so many needs on the line that they went receiver, but we'll see what he can do. Of course, Cam Irving of the Browns, and then Vic Beasley, the pass rusher, picked 8th overall by the Falcons. And I do like Vic Beasley.
Guy I did too.
Who can play.
So I liked him coming out.
It's pretty good company to be in. 5 pretty darn good players there, and we'll see how that ends up working out. But we will talk with Connor Orr at 2 o'clock first hour. Shelton, Nate Orchard, that's all coming. We're also going to look at our position review. We're going to look at the offensive line and see where that stands headed into this year. If we have time, we'll get to the linebackers as well. FanFest, I want to remind you, FanFest is this Saturday. at First Energy Stadium. You can sign up right now. Get your tickets at clevelandbrowns.com, the Browns mobile app. I'll be giving away some on my Twitter this week as well. Matt will be there. I will be there. More importantly, Sashi Brown will be there. Andrew Berry will be there doing a roundtable. We will have tons and tons of players, including Nate Orchard. He will be there. We're going to have the rookie minicamp practice. Chomps will be there.
Swag.
Swagalicious will be there. So it
I'm
is one of those.
Broadcast live.
You're broadcasting live.
Live from 9 to noon.
Yeah. We
Gibbs.
Just listen out for during this show for Gibbs' live read.
Dino and I.
His read
yeah.
of FanFest.
Oh,
great.
Man. It's going to be phenomenal. So in light of that, which player do you have to have either an autograph from or a picture with from the Browns this year?
You throwing that out there?
I'll throw that out there right now. We can start.
I have three that immediately popped in my. I got to get an RG3 autograph.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
I have to have a Corey Coleman.
Uh-huh.
And I want to say Duke, but I'll go defense. And I would say I'll go Joe Hayden.
Joe Hayden, okay. Strong. Meatball?
I'll agree with two of those, RG3 and Coleman, you know, like that. I already got a Hayden one, actually multiple Hayden autographs, so I don't
So cross him off. So hey, maybe you can give one to Matt Will.
I go Ogba.
Ogba's interesting, yeah.
Ogba would be. I mean, you know.
Joe Thomas, any love for him? A legend? No? Meatball? Yeah. Who's your third then, Meatball?
I mean, Gordon, maybe, if he's around.
Flash Gordon is not going to be at FanFest, unfortunately.
Well,
I can promise you that.
I don't know who my third would be then.
Okay.
I don't know.
Not the Crow? Caw-caw?
No, I don't have a Crow. Maybe I would get Crow or Duke. I don't know.
Okay. All right. Gibbs?
Show some love to the running backs.
Gibbs, what do you got?
Definitely Duke Johnson.
Duke, yeah. Really?
Yep.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah.
He's my fourth.
I'd go like Duke. You got to go RG3 because he's won a, you know, an NFC Rookie of the Year type deal. There's some value there.
Yeah.
It's a good item.
Value.
and then, God, I think you got to go Joe Thomas.
Okay. All right. I want to know what a certain individual, number 94 on the top 100 players of the year, has to do to get any respect around here.
Do it again.
I'm throwing RG3 on there.
Do it again.
Shots
Big
fired.
Play Gare.
Shots fired.
Do it again, and I'll be first in line.
Okay. So to you,
I'm a believer.
The hype of a rookie is
a
more
believer.
Exciting
yes,
than a 1 year of
yes.
a stud production.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I just think that what we added, Barnage, I guess, I'm taking for granted that Barnage is here. I'm taking for granted that Barnage is produced.
Okay.
You know, Barnage isn't exciting to me again as if he doesn't do it with the players along his side, which is Corey Coleman, RG3.
Okay.
And that's why. New additions. Everybody loves it. Do you want to drive the old car or do you want to drive the new one? I'm going to jump in the new one, take it for a ride. That's how I feel.
That's how you feel? Okay. All right. I like that. I'm going to go Gary, though, just because I feel like that's one that I would want to put up. But he's like my boy, so I'd want to have a Gary up in my basement. I would say Corey Coleman, because I think he's got the chance to be a superstar, and RG3.
Is there a superstar on defense on this team anymore?
Well, we'll see. Joe Hayden, you certainly hope.
Okay, beyond Joe Hayden.
You want, again, from a potential standpoint, Ogba.
Everybody's got potential.
From a potential standpoint, Shelton. But no, right now, it's a defense that needs that identity.
I don't know if Shelton doesn't go superstar to me. Shelton might go multiple-time Pro Bowler. You know, can you say Vince Wilfork was a Pro Bowler in the Patriots defense? Was Casey Hampton a superstar in that defense? No. He did his job, and he made the players around him in that defense so great. And that's what my expectation is for Danny Shelton.
Okay. Okay.
The same way we don't have conversations about Joe Thomas and sacks coming off that left edge and a team's inability to run the football in the middle of a defense. Is it Danny Shelton? Is it not a non-conversation because Danny Shelton's doing his job?
Correct.
That's what I want Danny Shelton to become.
It's not good. Right. What he's going to do is not going to necessarily show up.
No.
But he can.
I don't need him in the backfield. I don't need him sacking the quarterback. That should not be what he's doing in this defense if this defense gets good.
That makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense to me.
Put some analytics on that. Go study the nose tackles of 3-4 defenses.
Bob Millersburg says, no sense in getting my input on whose autograph I want since I can no longer get Dwayne Bowe's. Sorry, Bob. I do have a I have a Dwayne Bowe jersey in my house. True story.
He's not doing anything right now.
Neither. I liked Dwayne. I'm going to be honest about it. I liked him as a dude. I thought he was a fine man.
Okay.
I enjoyed talking with him. I did. I like people, though.
You can get a Dwayne Bowe jersey, and you can also buy Johnny Manziel's house in Avon.
On the market.
On the market.
You are correct,
both
sir.
On the market. Dwayne Bowe, Johnny Manziel, and Johnny Manziel's house on the market.
You are correct. Yeah, we'll find it. We'll see what that goes for. I wonder if like things would be found in that house, like interesting things in nooks and crannies.
Some mushrooms in the couch cushion or something?
Something. Who knows? Who knows? 216-578-0850. 216-578-0850. Since we will have Connor Orr on today, I do want to know, I am curious what, you know, your expectations are for Cam Irving, since that's the topic of his article. Do people think he can come in and step in right away? By the way, got to give a thank. Dustin Delotti says he's only coming to FanFest if he can get a small glimpse of what I could do under center. I think that's a nice thing to say.
It is.
You got a small glimpse of it, Wilhelm. You were happy in a no pad, no potential
injury
situation.
If you were in business casual attire with thousands of Browns fan doing anything under center, I would say that over like the marketing department has to feel that FanFest was a failure.
Or rookie minicamp was a failure.
Both. Yeah.
If people are
coming for that, as if 14 guys wasn't enough. The reason you're coming to FanFest is to get a glimpse of you and business cash taking the snap from under center and doing something with it.
May I bring a wardrobe change so I could do this in proper attire?
No. Still doesn't count.
Okay. All right. Meatball knows I can sling the pill around. He's seen it.
Hey, man.
You've seen it.
How many college football starting quarterbacks are not slinging the pill in the NFL right now?
Well, yeah, that's why I want to do
you
it for
fall
charity.
Into that
I'm
category.
Not doing it for to make a career out
Who
of it.
Who can't throw it?
This is going to be like we're talking about a Angels in the Outfield type of a film.
Oh, now it's a film.
Now it's a film, a documentary, a docudrama.
John Favreau, we got to put him on speed dial.
Gibbs, yes. We do. Who directed The Elf, by the way? And Gibbs, who would play you in this movie of my improbable fourth preseason game appearance where I lead the Browns to a first down or a touchdown?
Is Bull from Night Court still around?
How about the guy?
That's actually a great call.
How about the guy in Happy Gilmore that has the golf ball land on his foot? Could he play again?
He just passed away.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
Oh,
it's unfortunate.
Sorry.
It is unfortunate.
He was a Bond villain as well.
Yes,
he was a Bond villain.
Yeah.
I don't know who else is around.
Who else?
They have to be 6'5 plus.
Correct.
Vince Vaughn?
Not large enough.
He's got more hair than I do.
He does.
I don't know. I got to think about that.
We'll think about it in the break.
Okay.
Kevin Beard says, here are his FanFest requirements. He's got three of them.
Who's this, BV?
This is the Kevin Beard. This is the founder of the Jort Report.
Okay.
He says, number one, Gibbs in jorts.
I might wear jorts on Saturday then.
Number two, Taco Bell catering. Number three, Nathan Zagura slinging the rock. This is what the people, I mean, at some point we got to give the people what they want. Am I wrong?
I agree. And I take no offense that nobody's putting me on their list at FanFest.
You're just a give. You're like,
because I'm going to be in and I'm going to be out.
Everybody wants to meet you.
It's great.
You're Matt Wilhelm.
Make sure you
Buckeye
find that itinerary.
Listen, I don't have a bobblehead in this office. I got nothing.
40 bucks on Groupon. You could have your bobblehead in this office.
I got nothing but a bunch of dreams. A bunch of twinkles in my eye. You have Super Bowl rings, national championship rings, bobbleheads holding glass balls, standing over a stadium that looks tiny between your legs.
Not in a horseshoe shape.
Not in the shape of
a
horseshoe.
Because of my feet.
Because of your feet. There's a lot going on there. All right, when we come back, we'll open up the phone lines, 216-578-0850. Zagura, Wilhelm, Gibbs, and Meatball on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back. Hans Gerber, Matt Wilhelm, Meatball and Gibbs here on CBD. Todd Miller at Dog Pound Todd says, if John Grease, the guy who plays Uncle Rico, doesn't play Nathan Zagura in the movie, there's no way I'm watching. No doubt. No doubt in my mind. I think he's right. I think it's a good call. Also played Laszlo in the movie Real Genius.
I think people take both him as a quarterback and you as a quarterback about like the same severity.
I can throw the ball much better than Uncle Rico. I could throw it over that mountain.
This could be debatable.
It's hump day, bro.
That's right. Kevin Beard says, if Seth Rogen doesn't play Gibbs in the preseason fourth quarter comeback story, then nobody should.
I appreciate it. I'm honored. I'm honored to be associated with him. Very
Steve
funny
Brown
guy.
Says, and I don't know that this is, I don't think this is an, I don't think this is so nice. He says, big, bald, and a sense of humor, Look no further than the Big Show to play Gibbs.
I like it.
It's greasy.
That is a little greasy.
Bob in Millersburg has added to his requests. He would like to see you play air guitar to Motorhead at FanFest.
Not happening, bro. Sorry.
No, not happening.
You have to donate a significant amount of money to the Browns Foundation for that.
And even then, good luck. We've decided in the break, by the way, in the movie you would play yourself, Matt Wilhelm. You're an icon.
Or you could have the
guy. And who, by the way, could get that hair?
That's just true. And I don't even put any much effort into it anymore because I'm on radio.
It's naturally great.
But how about the guy that yesterday, Peter Pumpledinker, what is his name?
Peter Dinklage.
Yeah, him.
Do you know who Peter Dinklage is?
What?
What'd you say?
I started Game of Thrones.
Oh, so he knows.
Three
seasons
in. He's
three
How about
in.
Gibbs? Gibbs wasn't Peter. Gibbs, do you know who that is?
Yeah, Game of Thrones? Yes.
No, Peter Dinklage.
No.
You don't know who Peter Dinklage is?
No. That name makes me giggle, though.
It is a great name.
Juvenile one.
He's Tyrion in Game of Thrones.
Okay, great. Is that the dude? Okay. So
he's the guy who's shorter than everybody talking right now.
Here's.
Okay.
Bob in Millersburg wants to know.
That is even better.
Bob in Millersburg wants to know, since you are a kite aficionado, if you'd be willing to fly a kite while listening to Motorhead at FanFest.
No. Come on. Let's talk Browns. Like, this is no. Like, we're going off in like no man's land right no. now.
All right, fine. Peter Dinklage is where we were. We can talk Browns, 216-578-0850. What are your expectations before we take calls? What are your expectations for Cam Irving?
My expectations for Cam Irving is, first and foremost, and I think this might be the same for all Browns fans, is don't expect Cam Irving to be Alex Mack.
Yep.
Okay? There's going to be drop-off at center. There's going to be miscommunication at center. He's a second-year player who's 23 years old. Alex Mack left at or around the age of 30 and still got paid $49 million to go to Atlanta. Okay? He was a great player, multiple-time Pro Bowler, but a first-round guy. And I think that is what I want to see, the consistency of Cam Irving playing at a first-round level, if that makes sense. We saw that out of Alex Mack very early, which is why we gave him the extension when we did, after multiple years of service and being the cornerstone of that offensive line. And I want to see the continuity of playing whoever starts next to him, Batonio Greco, whoever it is. I want to see those three not miss a beat very often, the same way we did with Greco, Mack, yeah, and Batonio.
Do you think for a guy that played center in college, coming back to his natural position will seem much easier for him than it did perhaps, you know, going to a position that he'd never played and trying to do it against the very best in the world?
Yeah, I do. There's got to be, you know, muscle memory. There's and I think even mentally, what he accomplished in college, there are scenarios that he's going to be coached through that should be familiar for him because he was coached through those same scenarios in college, you know, taking on a certain stunt, dealing with a guy head up over top of you, as opposed to, you know, catching a lot. And I feel if he has taken a step, you know, in the offseason program physically, that's the other expectation. I want to see Cam Irving be more physical.
Yep.
Because this is not the zone scheme that allows the blocker to get into you and you're trusting in your scheme to win collectively as a unit. We're going to see guys winning more one-on-one blocks. Cam Irving's going to be singled up. It's going to be Cam and Greco or Cam and Batonio.
It's going to be much more man-to-man
chipping
blocking
up, you know, as Batonio or Greco now leave Cam after they give him a little shoulder help to get up and cover up the backer with Crowell running down his back. Cam's got to be able to stand in there and handle a nose tackle.
When you think about strength, because you and I were both surprised, because one of the things that, you know, the big knock on Cam was strength. So we went, we looked at the combine. He was finished, it was first or second, I don't remember, in bench press reps.
He was like, top 12 offensive linemen. right?
No, he was like top like three at 30.
At center or collectively?
I think of amongst the offensive linemen. He was in the top of he was at the top of the class. He had a star on NFL.com for a top performer. So why what is the difference between that strength and then functional strength in the NFL? So does that mean it was a technique issue? And if he can get better technique to better utilize what he obviously has natural strength.
Sure.
Is it so? Is that what it is? Is it technique?
It is technique, and I think a lot of Cam looking like he was physically outplayed last year came with him questioning his role, questioning himself, questioning his technique. He wasn't sure, as you mentioned, playing out of position. And I think when you evaluate guys and how many these guys prep for months in advance to get as many reps on the bench press on that particular day as they possibly can. You know, could Cam Irving do 20 right now? I don't know. Hopefully he could. But I think to go back to the question that, you know, asked Danny Shelton and so on and so forth is this new strength staff and their emphasis on position specific skills. Why do we need a wide receiver and an offensive lineman running the same, you know, conditioning, lifting the same reps, you know, or sets, or so on and so forth, when they're totally different? And I think the functional strength and the emphasis, you know, by Adam Beard putting the strength staff together is part of the growth process that we're taking as a football team. That you'll see them more physical than they've been playing in this scheme. They're just going to be even more physical. But it's just the emphasis on punching somebody in the face. Is really what it boils down to. Something that we hadn't seen in a long time.
People, I think, have the expectation, though. I think he's going to get better coaching. And I think for a guy who's a rookie, you know, it's one thing if Joel Bitonio in his second year, they lose Andy Muller right at the beginning of the season unexpectedly. It's another thing for a rookie who loses his offensive line coach right at the beginning of the season and never had even played that position.
Correct. That is, it's significant.
So I think that he is a guy that I think can make a pretty big turnaround this year for the Browns. 216-578-0850. Let's go to Justin in Mississippi now. Justin, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good, man. How are you?
Doing good. I know we talk about, like, the four and what could happen with the Browns a lot. You know, we know that, you know, what the worst-case scenario is, but I want to talk best-case scenario. And being from the Gulf Coast about 10 years ago when Sean Payton came into New Orleans, he was just a quarterback's coach, and he brought in a quarterback that, you know, was trying to resurrect his career, and they just had a complete overhaul from what happened with the Saints in prior years. And, you know, I just want to get y'all's thoughts if that's something possible here with Hugh Jackson, who brings, you know, just as much, if not more, than what Sean Payton brought, excitement-wise. And then RG3 being a second overall pick, you know, to Drew Brees being a second-round pick. You know, I know Brees made it at least to a playoff game, which, I mean, RG3 did too and got injured. That was pretty much the end of his career in Washington as well. And I know I'm trying to draw too many parallels. I just wanted to get y'all's thoughts on it.
I do think that, you know, when you have a culture change, which is one of the clear things that they're trying to do here with Hugh Jackson, with the character of the players they drafted, the volume of the players that they drafted coming in here, trying to impart change. Yes, you have an opportunity for culture change. And in the NFL, you can turn it around rather quickly. I do think for the Cleveland Browns, though, it's going to be a matter of, getting these guys in slow and steady progress. And I think you may not see overnight those things happen, but you should be able to see by December some signs of it. And Bill Polian said yesterday, the middle of the second season is when you'll really know if the culture change is there or if this team is making progress. As for RG3, yes, second rounder. Brees was a second rounder. RG3, obviously, second overall pick. Had injuries, went to different places, and really took off. Brees going from San Diego, where he was still, though, very, very good.
Yeah, he was.
And then going to New Orleans, where he took off with a guy who was considered a quarterback guru in Sean Payton. So, yes, it's there. It's going to be on them. I know that they're working as hard as they possibly can, RG3 and Hugh Jackson both, to make that a successful union. And I think at the end of this season, we will truly have an idea of what RG3's ceiling is as a quarterback in the NFL.
And I'll say it one more time, and I saw somebody say something about never. I think it might have been Pumpkinhead not saying it ever again, the whole play like a Brown. This year's play like a Brown is score touchdowns, affect the quarterback, and win.
Yep.
That is the new Browns mantra that Hugh Jackson's that he brings here.
Yeah, let's win. Gets it from the Raiders. Just win, baby. All right, when we come back, Connor Orr from NFL.com will be our guest talking about what he expects from Cam Irving. We'll get his thoughts on the Browns draft as well. That's coming up next. Still to come, Danny Shelton and Nate Orchard on a loaded edition of CBD.
And they stay there.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. We go now to the Ohio Business Machine Hotline, and we welcome in Connor Orr from NFL.com, who just wrote an article called Five Rookies from 2015. We shouldn't forget about number four of particular interest to Browns fans, Cam Irving, the center drafted 19th overall last year. Connor, welcome to the show. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks a lot for having me.
So let's talk about this article you went through. And, you know, the other receiving votes, Kevin White didn't play a snap last year. Breshad Perriman didn't play a snap. We know Shane Ray in Denver. But what made Cam Irving land on this list for you?
I think it was just because in my particular experience, before I covered the whole league, I covered the Giants, and I watched them draft the center, Weston Richburg, really early in the draft, second round. I watched them try to play him at guard. You know, right out of college. And then, you know, I watched how well he progressed moving to center and kind of feeling more at home in his natural position. And, you know, in looking back at Cam's snaps from last year, I mean, you still see all the raw tools. It's just that typical rookie discomfort. And that's why I think that when he's back at his natural position in a quicker kind of strike offense, I think you're going to see him improve dramatically.
What particular steps do you see him taking? Is it more from a technique standpoint, or is it the physicality associated with playing offensive line in the NFL?
I think it's probably a little bit of both, but, you know, technique is everything in the NFL. I mean, you know, you're not going to get drafted in the first round if you don't have that dog mentality, and I think we all know that he has that. But, you know, last year, everything, you know, a lot of the philosophies that going into the season weren't exactly the philosophies at the end of the season. I think you saw a lot of scheme confusion, but Hugh Jackson is a very friendly coach to offensive linemen. I mean, you're going to run the ball, yeah, but you're also going to get the ball out quick when you throw. You're going to make plays downfield to take a little bit of pressure off of your guys up front. So I think all that's going to help kind of combine together to aid Cam in his development.
I want to take you back to talking about Weston Richburg for a second there. What did you ever get a chance to speak to him about how he felt at guard versus, you know, going back to the natural position, and if it was just something, you know, when you have so many things to think about, especially the technique that you've never used before, does that make it easier going back to a position that where the technique is almost second nature because you've done it?
Absolutely. I mean, there's so much muscle memory associated, especially with the center position. And not only that, but there's that confidence. You're kind of the nerve center of the offensive line. All the protection calls are going through you, and, you know, it forces you to be a little bit more prepared than you would be otherwise. And also, you know, guard right now is probably the hardest position on the offensive line to play in the NFL because teams are focusing their pressure on interior, you know, as the left tackles and right tackles continue to get better. So I think all this will help Cam a lot because, you know, as Richburg found, once you move back to center with that knowledge, with that perspective, you're such a more complete player in that second year. And I think that's what we might see in Irving as well.
That's kind of where I was going with my question. Do you think that, you know, he understands now what it takes after his struggles as a rookie, you know, at his non-ideal position, but then having, you know, a year just past, you know, a couple weeks ago with the draft, having been in the National Football League and knowing the makeup of the two guys that will most likely play next to him and get into Hugh Jackson's system and let him dive in and just go to work?
Oh, totally. I mean, I think that all helps. And remember, too, I mean, when you're a rookie coming in, I mean, your body is just not yet conditioned, too. And that's probably a big underlying part of it. These guys are training nonstop through the combine, through their pro day. And that rookie season becomes harder, especially on guys like offensive linemen. There's a physical component, but like you touched on, I mean, there's just so much to getting your feet wet, having done it before, and then moving back to your natural position with more confidence. And I think that is why we might see a big jump this year.
Connor, do you think that the loss of Andy Moeller so close to the season for a rookie who was trying to play out of position really was something that would set a guy like Cam Irving back?
I think so. I mean, you know, you look at anything, you know, rookies in general are just, it's such a delicate process. And, you know, some people talk about the, you know, the fire hose effect of just, you know, throwing them in the water and forcing them to swim. But, you know, when you saw something like that as it, how it relates to Irving, it almost makes more sense to me to see teams stepping back. Even rookie mini camps, you're seeing a lot of just board work. Just this is what you do in case this happens. This is what you do in case that happens. And I think all that stuff is why you're seeing such a higher focus on just teaching, teaching, teaching ahead of anything else. And I think that, that's become a big deal. I mean, it's a much bigger jump than it used to be for these guys.
And I think that that's the emphasis that both Nathan and I have put on with why we feel the Cleveland Browns will take a big step, because not only do they have the right man in charge in Hugh Jackson, but the staff that he put together and their experience in the National Football League. And I asked this question yesterday, Bill Polian, he kind of put a zero or nix to this idea, but the coaching and what they get out of you as a player is probably a significant, and why people as Browns fans could see a jump in this team while not being as talented as they have been the last couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you can get out of a player is different, absolutely different from coach to coach, A and B. I mean, you talk about the rookie class this year. I mean, you can see it not only in the production that they drafted. You know, that was definitely the baseline for a lot of the guys that they drafted, but also the attitudes, the, you know, the backstories. You know, all these guys are coming in, you know, hungry and, you know, with kind of something on their shoulder. And I think that that's really going to play well into what Jackson's going to try to do with this team this year. And I think you're going to see a much more competitive atmosphere than in years past.
Connor, you're one of the few people that were very much from day one supportive of the vision of what the Browns were trying to do with Sashi Brown and Paul DePodesta, Andrew Berry, Hugh Jackson. Now that you've seen the offseason co with what they did in free agency, you know, what they've done now through the draft, and not only turning 10 picks into 15 players on draft day, but also a future one and two future twos, how would you rate what they've done thus far?
I don't think there's very many teams that, and, you know, you can't really judge a draft for 3 or 4 years.
Correct.
But I don't think there's that many teams that, at least on the surface, had a better draft. I mean, because I thought it was really interesting to hear what Sashi had to say about how no team should be 3-13. I mean, there's such little disparity in talent. And so what the Browns are trying to do is not load up on a certain round, but to get as many shots as they can in the top 100. And that's where your talent is. And I think that's what they're doing. And, you know, Pro Bowlers come from every round. So, you know, what you saw Cleveland doing is drafting highly productive college players that will probably translate a little bit quicker, not a lot of project picks. And I think that that's such a great idea for a roster that really needs a bedrock more than anything.
Connor, I'll take away the two easy picks, both Corey Coleman and Emmanuel Ogbah, taken 15th and 32nd. As you look at the Cleveland Browns draft picks, beyond those two, what are the one or two players that you think could have a big impact in year one as a rookie?
I'm a big fan of Carl Nassib. I covered his brother, and it was funny. You know, I knew his brother back at Syracuse back when, you know, Carl was not even a starter on his high school football team, which is crazy to me to see him, you know, drafted this high. But, you know, you heard those kind of Jared Allen comparisons, and I think so much of this is attitude. I mean, you know, you see some guys that are drafted, and that's kind of the apex of, you know, the instant gratification. But, you know, this is a guy that legitimately feels robbed, that he thinks that he should have more time to be a starter and to play good football. And I think that as long as the size continues to mature and the body continues to mature, I think he's going to be a very highly productive defensive end slash pass rusher for them. And he asked for a second, but I'll say I kind of like the idea of mass drafting wide receivers. It almost reminds me of what John Schneider does in Seattle, where you're saying, hey, maybe we won't keep all these guys, but you got to compete for a spot. You really got to show us something quick, and that's why there's five of you, four of you in here right now. And I think that that's also a great kind of philosophy that they went with in the draft this year.
Talking with Connor Orr from NFL.com on the Ohio Business Machines hotline. Connor, you talked about one first-round pick, Cam Irving. In his second year, what kind of leap are you expecting from Danny Shelton?
I think it's going to be all about scheme. I mean, I think that it was kind of a disappointment to see his snap totals from a year ago. I think that there's probably, you know, you're not going to want a guy with that size maybe on the field all three downs, and I understand that. But I also think that there's probably some more creative ways to use him. I mean, Shelton is so athletic for his size. And, you know, I think that we're definitely going to see some more of that. And, two, you know, just like we talked about with Cam Irving, learning how to use your body in an NFL environment is so much different than college. Danny Shelton was so dominant, even at the Senior Bowl when I saw him last year. And I think that once the level of competition steps up, sometimes it takes a year or two to really learn how to hold your own, and I think that that's going to be a big thing for him as well.
Connor, last question for me, and it's about a guy who did not have his fifth-year option picked up by the Cleveland Browns, Barkevious Mingo. Do you see him making enough of an impact to have a future here in Cleveland beyond just this year?
Well, you know, you're hearing a lot of positive things, at least about, you know, putting on some weight, being in better shape coming in. And, you know, there's such a fine line with those guys, right? I mean, you know, those kind of hybrid linebacker rush ends, you know, whether it's going to be an Aaron Maben type or whether it's going to be a really productive, super outside linebacker pass rusher. And, you know, I think that he's smart and he's athletic. And I think that really those are kind of the baseline things that you need to be good in this league. So, I mean, while I don't necessarily see him maybe as a three-down player, I do think that he can kind of save his career this year. I mean, I think that it's a great defense. It's almost inspired by that old Steelers kind of mentality. And they have a ton of players like him, guys that can just get to the quarterback. I think that's what he should focus on this year.
Talking with Connor Orr from NFL.com. Connor, as the Browns get set to start their mini camp, and of course we talked about in the draft, they acquired some future assets, some of which are from the Philadelphia Eagles, none more important than, of course, the 2017 first-round pick. What did you think of the Eagles offseason and kind of the tumult they've had at quarterback, their draft, et cetera, and where they're looking headed in to 2016?
I think it's really interesting. I think it's definitely a bold move by Philadelphia for a lot of reasons. I mean, you're going to have to iron out some things in your locker room immediately. But going forward in the future, a lot of people are saying that they wanted a quarterback this year because maybe next year or the next 2 years, that franchise player isn't available in the draft. And so I think a lot of what we'll judge the trade on is how right they were. I mean, could you have gotten a great player without giving up a pick next year and avoiding kind of this awkward grooming process that you have now? But I think the Eagles have had a really interesting offseason. It's definitely a powerful kind of retakeover of the front office by Howie Roseman. And,
yes, you
know, good for him. I mean, I think that this is something that they wanted to reshape the organization in an Andy Reid-style philosophy, and they're going for it. So I think it's one of those things where good for them for not waiting. I mean, I guess if you feel the time is right, you might as well try.
And Connor, I'll pop in for one more. Jared Goff, Carson Wentz, who's the better pro 7 years from now?
I think that's a really interesting question. I liked Goff going into the draft. I liked him kind of, even though Wentz really made a late push there to be the number one pick, and there were a lot of people who had him rated over that. But I just think that the battery of throws that he can make, the makeup, the level of competition, I think there's going to be less of a learning curve. I think overall, I think 7 years from now, I think the Rams will still be happy that they have him at quarterback.
Be interesting to see how it plays out. Connor, we appreciate the time. You can follow him on Twitter at Connor Orr, covers the league for NFL.com and is expecting some nice things from Cam Irving stepping in for Alex Mack at center for the Browns. Thanks, Connor.
Thanks, guys.
All right, when we come back here on CBD, we'll open up the phone lines, 216-578-0850. Coming up at 2 o'clock, we will have Danny Orchard in studio. Later on in the second hour, Nate Orchard. Danny Shelton and Nate Orchard.
Okay.
We can have them both at the same time and have.
I love the hybrid player.
Nate Shelton would be a solid player.
Hybrid player between the two of them? That'd be a hell of a five technique.
It'd be a beast. A beast. We will have Danny Shelton at 2, Nate Orchard 2:30 on CBD.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, 216-578-0850. Zagura, Wilhelm, Meatball, Gibbs. We have a question from Nick Smith. He wants to know about guys on the practice squad last year. There were some that they were excited about. How will it be this year? And he said, is the practice squad still exist? It's not a year-by-year thing. So practice squad exists every single year. You can have, there are rules for who is eligible to be on the practice squad. You know, once you've played a certain number of games in the NFL, you're no longer eligible to be on the practice squad. Or not even played, but on the active game day roster. But it exists year after year, and the Browns will always, every team will always have that stocked. Now, if a guy is on the Browns practice squad and another team wants him, the only way they can take him off the Browns practice squad is to sign him to their active roster. That has happened with Charles Johnson going to Minnesota. That has happened with Hayes Pollard, who went to Jacksonville last year. So that does happen. The Browns do it as well, as they take guys off of practice squads and not the other way.
Yeah, not only do we take them off of other practice squads, but I know from my time in the NFL, you'll see a lot of teams promote a guy for a week or two or a speckling of weeks. You know, they'll be up simply because they want to have depth available on the active roster or potentially in uniform on game day.
Yes.
So it's developmental, but it's also kind of like your, you know, your stock shelf of where guys kind of sit. And when, say, you know, two offensive linemen are down in the same week, you need to bring up a guy from the practice squad to the active roster. In uniform or not, you need to be safe and at least have him available to you when you make your, you know, inactives on Sunday morning.
So the practice squad rules are as follows. You can have 10 players on your practice squad. It used to be 8 in 2014. They added two more to the practice squad, upping it to 10 players for each team. Players who are listed on the practice squad still work out and practice with the team. They don't get to play in games or enjoy the financial benefits players on the final roster do, as they are paid significantly less than guys on the roster. Who is eligible for the practice squad? It's limited to players who are on an active roster for fewer than 6 games or were on the 45-man active game day roster for fewer than 9 games. Plenty of practice squad spots will go to rookies who are adjusting to the NFL. A player is allowed on the practice squad for up to 2 years, with 1 year counting as 6 weeks in a season. A third year on the practice squad is only allowed if the team keeps 53 players on the active-inactive list at all times. So those are the practice squad rules. Again, if somebody wants to take someone from your practice squad, they must sign them to their active roster. That's it.
Funny story about practice squad guys, and it's probably the standard in locker rooms in the National Football League. Mind you, these guys are making somewhere between, I don't know, $4,000 to $7,000 take home after taxes, you know, for every 2 weeks to come up and make, you know, on an active week's check now make $23,000 in one check.
Sure.
And the NFL and the NFLPA are doing everything they can to put the resources and the right information in front of players. But it was always so funny because when you're a starter or you've been up and you're always active, it's like, you know, monotonous sometimes. Like you just go through the motions in season that you notice who got an active paycheck. Cause sometimes you don't know that so-and-so's up because they're not in uniform on game day, but you'll know they were up and active soon thereafter when they go from making $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 to making that $23,000 burst per se on a rookie minimum deal, because that Tuesday, but you know, after they get paid, they've got the Gucci sneakers and the Prada glasses and the new Louis Vuitton bag.
It's probably not smart.
It's not the smartest thing, but it's you always knew when someone got activated who you knew was on, who you for sure knew that they were on the practice squad. They're like, oh, that active paycheck, there it is, walking through the locker room, because they just look different.
Do people on the active roster pay attention to who's on the practice squad? And do you know? Would you have known in practice that somebody got activated, or would you only know because they were walking around new goods?
Combination of the both. The new goods, I would say, from an offensive standpoint. Defensively, you'll take notice because of, as I mentioned earlier, maybe it might be Monday, it's like the ones running with the ones and twos running with the twos. Sometimes you go, well, why the hell is he out there? You know, why is he getting reps with the twos? And it's because so-and-so's hurt or not at practice because they're inside rehabbing, off on the side riding the bike. So-and-so is either potentially going to be activated this coming week and they're getting him some practice reps now until the transaction happens later in the week. But you specifically know what's relevant to you. So if there's a linebacker in your room that you know is a practice squad guy, the coach or he, it will be known in your room that there's an opportunity to be activated on. Because the over prep, the cramming for the test starts.
And there's an opportunity, by the way, when a guy is activated from the practice squad, it means somebody is dismissed from the team.
Not necessarily.
Or injured, placed on IR.
Or injured, placed on IR.
Taken off the roster.
Or exactly. Or you'll see them manipulate multiple practice squad spots. So someone can go, they'll dismiss two practice squads, you know, so that one guy can stay outside the, you know, the active 53, so that when this guy falls back off, they'll bump a guy down in, you know, who is basically on the active roster but hasn't played in a game. He can bump down to the practice squad for that week. You bump a guy up to the active roster, you know, and then they flip flop back and forth all, you know, as long as you need them. Because it's tough. You know, when the hard thing is, the manipulation comes when the guy that's getting hurt or the depth that you need at that position, the starter and the backup don't have practice squad eligibility. So they're taking up two roster spots, but you need to add depth. So you have to cut a player, have him clear waivers, then add him to your practice squad, or cut him, hope he clears waivers, bump that guy up from the practice squad, and then hope you can play that game and sign that guy back. So there's a lot of manipulation when it comes to that bottom.
And that's the maneuvering, and that's something that you would think that the Browns, with their new processes in place, will find, you know, if there is a competitive advantage to be found in the practice squad, they will try to find it.
For sure, absolutely.
All right, that'll do it for our first hour. When we come back, the big man, Danny Shelton, will be with us in studio as we kick off hour number two on this hump day edition of Cleveland Browns Daily. Zagura, Wilhelm, Gibbs, Meatball.